and experience. So I cooked it at home a few times, served it to a few different people with shrimp and with salmon jerky and like pan-fried salmon, a whole lot of different things. And then I started experimenting with it on a camping stove when I was out. Can I make this on a camping stove, and can I serve it to people when I'm doing a winter camp?
Welcome to the Social Fabric Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Splendori, and this week my guest is Kieran Creevy. Kieran is a chef and a writer. He also works as an expedition chef in places such as the Arctic Circle. The songs on this podcast have been shortened for rights reason. The program is also broadcast every Monday at 4:30 p.m. on Near FM 90.3. Please subscribe, share and review. It's the only way podcasts like this have a chance to survive. For more information, please visit andreasplendori.com. The title tune is Alice by Lucky Bones.
Can I call you up, oh Alice, on a Friday night? We could reminisce on old days.
So I'm chatting with Kieran Creevy here, and thanks a million, Kieran, for joining me on this podcast. And I'll tell you what we start from, because we never actually met yet. We start from, who are you? Tell me a bit about you. Tell me a little bit, where did you grow up? A little bit of a bio, just to get a idea of who we're talking to.
Yeah, grew up in Dublin. First few years as a kid, it was, you know, usual kid experiences, going out into the forest, playing around, and, you know, getting mucky. And I was lucky, grew up in the 70s and the 80s, so that element of, all right, look, leave the house now, but make sure you're home for dinner, which I love, and I wish more kids had that experience now, or could have that experience now, where your parents were like, great, you're leaving the front door, I expect you to be home, unless there's a massive accident. You know, I don't see any problem, you know, and equally, you were expected to be 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening for dinner, and it's like, you turn up an hour late, it's like, well, the dinner's gone, you can go to your room, it's like, yeah, I'm hungry, you know, whereas now it's, you're gone for a few hours, and like a message, oh great, is everyone okay, what's going on? So I really appreciate the day, that and the freedom that my parents gave me, and my sister, and a lot of my friends. I've jumped off a bit, Matthew. Right now I work as an expedition chef, outdoor chef, private chef, mountain instructor, and I'm currently studying to be an Arctic wilderness guide. Which, for somebody who grew up in suburban Dublin, is a bit odd. But I'd say probably one of the first, scouts would have been an initial catalyst. Going to that, or say cubs, should I say, when I was about 6 or 7, and, you know, a little bit of the outdoorsy stuff where you're camping outside, or as it was when a few times, camping in an Icelandic tent, which was this massive, I'd say, 40-50 kilo canvas thing that 12 was slept in. There was no ground sheet, the doors were closed by bits of rope and wooden toggle, and I always remember it's like this breeze and drizzle like blowing in from time to time, so whoever was at the doors, like, that was the least favorite position. But I think probably I don't know, I can't remember the year exactly, but whenever Robin of Sherwood came on the TV, which was BBC or Channel 4 or ITV even, I remember that vividly, and go, I want to go and live in the forest now. Obviously I didn't do it, but that element of going outside and spending time in the woods really made an impact. Small impact probably at the time, but it led on to other stuff. Those moments of going out with your parents, and they would take you for a little hike, and I would decide, right, look, I'll see you at the top of the hill. I'm just going into the forest here. And part of it being a kid was can I go into the forest, hide and surprise them, or, as it probably was, annoy my little sister, which I think I did a bit too much, like jumping out of forest and probably getting a clatter from my parents for being bold. Two things that made a huge impact in terms of how my career was gone. One was when I went to Carlo RTC, or Carlo IT as it is now, there was a hiking and climbing club. Joined that, and we, I don't know, probably five or six or seven times a year, we'd go down to Wicklow, stay in the Glenlock IMC hut, belongs to the Irish Mountaineering Club. And from there, we'd go out on hikes. And that was brilliant. I've been out in the hills for 2 or 3 days in the trot. Really inspired me. One night, I think it was in the depths of winter, probably January, February time we were down there, weather was foul. And probably 7 or 8 o'clock at night, we were all inside the hut. And then out of nowhere, two guys just walked in, head torches on, big pack. So, like, it's fully dark. What are you nutters doing? Like, oh, we were just doing a bit of night navigation. Like, as though it was nothing. Like, coming off the Wicklow Mountains, which aren't the Alps or the Himalayas, are incredibly difficult. But still, for somebody just getting into the whole outdoors, seeing somebody hike off the hill in confidence in full darkness was something I didn't think was possible or would be incredibly difficult. And they're like, oh yeah, that was fine. So from going to Carlo, I joined the club, spent a lot of time outside. Then for fun, that summer holidays, I decided to go hike the Tour de Mont Blanc, which is 10 days, 2 weeks roughly, circular trip, camping every night. And on that trip, one of the hiking leaders, chatting to them while we were going along, he said, do you do this professionally? He's like, yeah, you know, like I'm in university now. But yeah, I work during the summer as a hiking leader and I get paid. What, you get paid to take people on the hills? Yeah. Okay, I want to do that. At the time, I wanted to be an industrial designer. That's what I was studying in college. But that was probably one of those, what's the German word? Ohrwurm, like earworm, the kind of thing that sticks in your head and doesn't go away.
Right.
And then I had a little bit of time at the end of the trip. And the instructors or leaders had a week or so off, and one of them said, hey, do you fancy going up Mont Blanc? All right. Remember ringing home, can I stay out here a few days longer? Now, I didn't tell my folks exactly what I was doing. It's like, I'm just going for another hike for a few days. So that was an incredible experience. Like, I'd never had crampons on before, never used an ice axe. Never been properly on snow. Well, obviously, yeah, Ireland in the 70s, 80s had a couple of snowfalls, but it's quite different when it's steeply angled and crunchy. But I remember coming home from that completely changed, blown away by the experience. Yeah.
Okay.
So much so that the year I finished college in May and found an outdoor education course in Dublin, Coláiste Duilig. It's a PLC, post-leaving cert course. The course was called the Shackleton Outdoor Education course, and I signed up for that. Had to go in for an interview as to why they should accept me. So you had to hand over obviously, you know, what have you done for the last couple of years, your leaving cert information, but also they were quite rigid in who they would accept. Like, it was pretty intensive. 25 students started it. It's a pity to say, out of all 25 students who started the course, there's one woman and myself are the only two who are still actively working in the outdoors. Mm. But it's not for everybody.
let me pause you there for a second, because I want to ask you some more about that. But
sure.
let's break it for your first song, which is The Cure, Plain Song. Obviously, you say growing up in the 1780s, The Cure were very much it. Tell me about it. Yeah. Why that song?
Well, first off, I wasn't a Cure head. I definitely wasn't cool enough for that. I was, a swot or a nerd, whatever you like to call it, head down, get into the books. I definitely didn't have the swagger to be a Cure head. That song, for me, that one song resonates with the Shackleton Outdoor Education course. Mm. What year was it? Second year in the course, we were spending a week in Achill Island, mm-hmm. for kayaking, windsurfing, gaining experience. So learning how to get your own practical skills and learn how to teach in like wavy and windy weather. West of Ireland, you're definitely going to have a whole lot of both. And that song sticks in my head because we were driving down onto this, onto the beach on Achill, or driving down to the edge of it. Had it on the Walkman, the old style one where you batteries and occasionally would run down. And we couldn't see the waves. We couldn't see the sea at all. It was incredibly dense fog and mist. So you kind of lost all sense of where land and sky were. Like, obviously, we were walking on the beach, everybody in wetsuits, taking in their kayaks, their surfboards, their windsurf boards. The wind was blowing a hoop. And that song was playing at the time. And every time I hear it, I'm back on that beach again.
I love the way you described it. I mean, years ago, and you still remember the details. Obviously, the outdoors is very important to you, and we'll get to that in a minute. But
yeah.
what I'm really curious about is, you kind of hinted already, but you went into college to do something, engineering, and did you finish that? Tell me a bit about that, how from there you went from engineering to slowly moving away from it, or did you go into engineering work-wise? What happened with college and after, before we get to chefing, because that'll be my next question.
Yeah, no, it was industrial design.
Yeah, sorry, industrial design of college.
Yeah, so that was like 3 years in Carlow, where like we were really fortunate. So it wasn't super regimented in terms of lecture timetables. We did have lectures, but a massive chunk of our timetable was studio time. So we'd be in a studio designing new products. So you're left to your own devices. You had to put the work in. If you didn't have it done, then sorry, it's not falling on anybody else. I did it because I loved, when I was a kid and a teenager, I loved drawing. I loved designing things. But at the end of it, like I finished the course, it was a diploma course, but there was no massive desires. Like, yeah, great, I'll start going to look for a job in a design studio and see how it goes. But the previous year, having been in the Alps, and then between second year and third year went off hiking again, that was niggling at me a lot. Mm-hmm. So I probably could have said, well, okay, let's see what happens. Is there scope for work out here? But it didn't. I'd lost the drive to work in a studio, and it was just the outdoors were calling to me. And that's how I ended up luckily finding the Shackleton course and join that, and haven't really looked back since. That's what, had I started working in the design industry, I can't imagine how my life would look now. I know it's one of those, you know, small little moments make big differences on it and make big impacts on our lives. There's lots of, oh, what if? What if I hadn't gone here? What if I hadn't done this? I don't regret it at all, not in the slightest. It was weird, like spending 3 years working, you know, 5 days a week and then just stopping, not using it at all. But I don't regret not.
No, and it is fascinating. It's what attracted me to these conversations is the fact that you now are passionate. You're passionate at what you're doing, and you're doing to the best of your capability. Where if you were doing industrial design, you'd probably be very good, but it wasn't. There was no passion there to follow, which would have made you probably, I don't know, an average industrial designer. I don't know, but that's really the isn't it? The crux of it. Sometimes we go straight into, after leaving CERT, into something that we believe is going to be our future, and then we get this. Yeah, very interesting. Okay, tell me about this Clannad, and I can't pronounce it. Even after 30 years in Ireland, I can still can't pronounce any Irish words. What's the song called?
Cash Law and Ore.
There you go.
Yeah.
What about that song?
That was back a little bit to earlier on. So that was it. That song appeared on Robin of Sherwood. So back in the early 80s. Pre-college time, and remember when I think the earliest song I can remember in my parents' house was what the hell was it, the theme from Harry's Game by Clannad. Okay. I don't know, I was probably 5 or 6 at the time. They had, like, definitely wasn't poppy music, you know, but it was it played regularly. Again, it's one of those songs that has just stuck with me.
You're an expedition chef and private chef, and I want to get to the expedition in a second. But now we went from growing up in the mountain, having a lot of interest in the outdoors, and doing all other things. Again, we're going to go to that. But when did chefing come into it, and how did you get to it? How did you get to become a chef?
Luckily, my dad was a chef instructor, so it was learning at home. And he was trying to teach my sister and I how to cook, you know, like the basics. Okay, look, you're old enough and tall enough not to pull a pot of water down on yourself. Okay, I'm going to start teaching you. You know, it's like, okay, great. Way not to scare us, Dad. And then he said, okay, I'm teaching you because your mother and I are not going to cook for you all the time. We want you to know how to cook. So you are self-sufficient later on, and also when you know, at some point in time, you can cook for us. So it started off, he would cook the Sunday lunch. My dad worked in a industrial kitchen Monday to Friday, so my mum would make the family dinner every day, and then on the weekend my dad would take over. It was all like basic things like how to make a roux, how to make various different sauces, how to actually hold vegetables and meat and a knife and not cut your fingers off. So he spent ages showing us how to chop stuff, and occasionally it'd be, okay, great, we're doing this dish. I need you to dice a half dozen onions. And, you know, it's like, okay, come on, you can do it without without slicing your finger. So it was, repetition, and it's stuck with me. My sister didn't really enjoy it, so I think after about a couple of months of him trying to show both of us how to do certain dishes, she's like, oh no, I'm not bothered. But I was like, great, fine. It was time with my dad to learn something that he obviously was passionate about, and he had a huge amount of skill set behind it. So yeah, that was I don't know, years and years of doing various different things. And because he worked in an industrial kitchen, he was really good at teaching me about numbers and quantities and how to cook, not just for a family of four or six or eight people, but how do you do the maths on cooking for 50 or 100, which is just maths. It's figuring out the timing, figuring out the quantities. So occasionally I'll, like even now, if friends say, oh, look, I'm cooking for 20, how do I do it? It's like, well, just multiply by 5. Was like, oh, so you're talking about like a sack of onions. Well, you know, yeah, just, it's not that difficult. But if you're only used to cooking for 2 or 3 or 4, suddenly multiplying that by order of magnitudes can be a little bit daunting. And then when we were in our teens, my sister and I were in our teens, my dad had an extra job where he was catering for private parties. So he said, right, fine, I need extra people to help me. You guys are going to help me, and this is going to be add to your pocket money. So like we would get a little bit of pocket money every week, like £5 or something like that. He said, well, okay, you help me out tonight. We're catering for 200 people. It's a wedding anniversary or something like that. You help with prep work. You help with serving, clearing away. We'll get home probably around 10 or 11 o'clock tonight. But it's 40 or 50 quid. So when you're like 13 years old and 50 quid back in the 80s in one go, it's like, okay, great. You know, it would be, oh, all right, fine, you've got 50 quid. You've got to budget that for the next whatever number of weeks until the next job comes up. So that was great. So that was, again, was a bit more learning on the job, how to cater for those large numbers, how much is involved, like how much prep work was required to produce 4, 5, or 6 dishes and serve it and clear up. So it was we might start doing all the prep work at, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning, and we probably get back at 10 o'clock at night. So it was a long day, but I loved it. We did one event at the Aer Lingus Salsa Club. I can't remember exactly what the event was. And it was a huge thing, like 300, 400, 500 people involved, if I remember right. So it was a much bigger production. So that was that, like learning at home. I can't thank my dad enough for that. Because I learned, I did a few jobs when I was in college down in Carlow, like the occasional gig where I would chef for a private party. So maybe 8 or 10 or 12 people, nothing on the same numbers as what my dad used to do. That was a bit of a step up learning. So a lot of that was trialing new dishes. And obviously Ireland back in the 70s and 80s, there spice was basically white pepper ground up and salt and maybe something that was sort of a yellowy orangey color and called curry powder. You know, there was no such thing as, I don't think my parents saw like galangal or kefir lime leaves, or I think my mom mentioned in the 90s finding sweet potato for the first time. So what is this, you know? Luckily, when I was in Carlow, I shared a house with a friend I had for 25 years, and his parents had traveled a huge amount, like traveled all around the world. And once or twice going over to their house, walking into their kitchen, it's like, what in the name of God? Like these massive spice racks, what the hell is that? You know, it's like, here, try some of that. Like, so I experimenting with stuff I'd never encountered before, and occasionally trying it at home and trying to feed my parents, and occasionally not working out, you know, trying some spice and realizing, okay, quantities on that one were totally wrong. I got like, I don't know what, 7 or 8 different spices that you would use in a curry. So black onion seed, black cardamom, coriander seed, fennel, cumin, a whole lot of bits and pieces. and I decided to make a curried dish for my folks. Unfortunately, I picked the worst combo possible. I decided to curry some cabbage and serve it with scrambled eggs. That was, yeah, I've no idea on earth what the hell made me do it. I remember my dad taking the spoon of it, spitting there. It's like, that's the worst thing I've ever tasted. Never do that again. It's like, okay, I need to learn how to use spice properly. My dad was an army chef. That's how he learned. And I remember him once talking about, he's like, whatever about us feeding 200 or 300. I think he said it was one time, like, there was a couple of chefs, a team of 10, and they were feeding 1,500 people, breakfast and lunch and dinner. Like, bloody hell, like, the logistics of that is mind-boggling. And, yeah, like, he is trying to figure out, how do you stretch out ingredients, especially when you're not close to supplies, and feed that many people, you know?
Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay, let me ask you about Ali Farka Touré. I do. Great tune.
That was, went to, saw an ad in a UK trekking magazine. Was it 20? I think it was 23. Which was, come to Morocco, learn some skills as learn how to ride a camel in the desert, learn how to find watering holes, go hiking in the Atlas Mountains, and then leading clients. I was like, oh yeah, two years previously I'd qualified as a mountain leader, which you can use in Ireland and the UK only. I was like, well, this is brilliant. I can learn some new skills. I go to a different country and work there. And initially a whole load of people turned up for the first weekend in the Peak District. And out of that, I was the only one who stuck with it. And the owner of the company, I think we met up in September, October, and then in November, the owner rang me and says, yeah, listen, so do you want to come out to Morocco with me in January next year? Fly to Birmingham, I'll pick you up. And then we'll drive down to England, get a ferry to Spain, drive through Spain. And then, yeah, we're going to be in Morocco for, I don't know, 5-6 months. yeah, okay. Anyway, one of the days, decided, okay, I'm going to go from where I was in the village. I'm going to go up to this pass, going to climb this peak. I'm going to go here. I know somebody who's living over in this village. I might be able to stay with them for a night or two. And I had, the Talking Timbuktu tape in the Walkman. That was the only one I had with me that day. I was on my own for hours and hours, taking the trail, and idea was the one that stuck in my head. And you know, well, that stage when the batteries run down and the song gets really slow, that started happening. And I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour later, this kid turned up, like Sunday best dress shoes, and it's like, oh, hello, do you need me to carry your bag? You can pay me 10 dirhams to carry. I said, no, it's grand. Where's the next village? He said, oh, what are you listening to? Well, music and the Walkman. So this doesn't sound really good. Oh, the batteries are running down. He's like, okay, I'll go get some batteries for you. Give me 10 dirhams. And he disappeared. I gave him the money. It's like, all right, fair enough. He ran back to the village and then ran back to me again, gave me the batteries. He's like, thanks very much. So, I don't know what it might have cost, maybe 5 dirhams, some 50p. So he made five dirhams from running probably, or running or jogging for an hour and a half back and forth. Vividly, when I hear that song, I remember being in the mountains in Morocco and that kid just turning around and hey, how are you doing?
Okay, we get into the expedition cooking, which is what you're currently doing, the expedition chefing. And looking at your website, you say combining five-star dining with your outdoor pursuits, you know, where you normally would eat, you know, soggy sandwiches. What you provide is the combination of a nice outdoor pursuit with a nice meal. So give me an idea, how does it work, and how, give me an idea of an expedition you've done recently or you're planned, and how does that work?
Recent ones, so
one you have planned for the future, anything, just to get an idea.
Yeah, probably the last one I did was with a couple of pro climbers. They were doing a new volcanic tower in a route in São Tomé, which is an island off West Africa. So it's São Tomé and Príncipe. So it's its own country. I'd been through Instagram, just being in touch with one of the climbers. Said, look, hey, if you ever need a chef on a trip, let me know. And out of the blue, she's like, we're going to Africa to climb this tower in a couple of weeks. Do you want to come along? It's going to be living in the jungle for 3 weeks at least. But yeah, if you're free. Okay, fair enough. That was, now the level of climbing they were at is, you know, it's at the top end of the professional climbing level. You know, even if you climb regularly, this is, you know, trying to smear onto greasy wet rock with your tips of your toes and your fingers on overhanging rock in the middle of the jungle where it's raining for hours. Like it's proper, like, bloody hell, this woman's like a spider woman, like how she can cling to that stuff. I was at base camp in the jungle for the 3 weeks, cooking for them. And my first time, I'm not sure, but possibly my last time in the jungle, because, like, whatever about coming from Ireland where it's damp and drizzly, this was on a totally different level. It's drizzling a little bit during the day, then you get like the proper downpours, in which you could last for hours and hours. And then, but that with 28 to 30 degrees temperature and about 90% humidity. We had to get resupplied from the locals every week or so, just because, like, I'd use as much fresh food as I could in the first few days. But like bananas would go from nicely ripe to brown in 2 days max, just with the conditions. Stuff that the ladies really liked was strawberry and banana pancakes in the morning. So I'd taken out a whole load of freeze-dried strawberry powder from an Irish supplier, which is just strawberries, whole strawberries that had been chucked into a freeze-drying chamber, freeze-dried so they lose about 90-95% of their moisture, and then they were ground into powder. So mixing that with coconut milk powder, banana powder, a few other ingredients, and you can actually create really nice pancakes, even though I was just cooking off two little camping stones. So it was that. There were skillet flatbread. We did American style grits. So,
and who decides the menu, Kira? Is it you, or is it the people you traveling with?
That one was there was a lot of, okay, what don't you eat? What foods do you not like? What are you allergic to? And then, so I had from the women who, the pro climbers, like they brought along a videographer and a pro photographer as well. Pro photographer is also a sponsored athlete. So, okay. I was the only guy in the on the trip. It was an all-female expedition. I'm honored that they actually even asked me. So I had a base from which to work. And then it was, we had a few days in the main town in Sao Tome. And I went off with one of the local team who took me to the supermarket, and I had to figure out what I could buy. So I had a huge wadge of cash, which which said, no, the best exchange rate we get from dollars and euros is buying on the street corner. Don't buy from the bank because you're not going to get as good a rate. So I don't know how much you're having, but it was like two fistfuls of notes. Great, fine, this is what we're going to buy. So figuring out what's going to last, what's going to be practical. So I couldn't take a whole lot of tins up because that's going to add a ton of weight. It was from the nearest point where we could get the car, it was, I think, about probably about a three-hour hike uphill through the jungle. So like wet, slippery, muddy, also snakes. So big wellies. And with that humidity and not having refrigeration, so well, a lot of stuff is going to go off really quick. So we couldn't have milk, for example. So we'd have milk powder. I brought over coconut milk powder to add to the coffee in the morning. It's thinking about where you're going to be, what's the weather going to be like, how easy is it going to be to be resupplied. Mm. Also, like part of the thing for me with the food and the away on trips is if you serve the same thing day after day after day, no matter how good it is, if you had the same curry for 2, 3, 4 weeks on the trot, your taste buds are going to get bored with it. And then you don't want to eat. You know, or you don't want to eat as much, that I'm done with that. And then your morale goes down. So yes, food is really important physiologically for us, but the psychological aspect sometimes isn't talked about enough. So like, yeah. Think about when you go out to a restaurant, well, not right now, but you know, the best meal you've had in a restaurant, the smell and taste of it lives with you for years. You know, even meals you've had 20 years ago, if you smell some of those spices or ingredients again, you can recall the dish, like sure. Clear as a bell, or your favorite meal with friends at home. Yeah. You know, that resonates. So, and then your moments of, like when you're out on the hills, you've gone for a bike ride or a run or a hike or something like that, like a ham and cheese sandwich after 6 or 7 hours hiking, yeah. tastes like gourmet food, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, that was it. You know, like if you had the same sandwich at home after working in the office for 3 or 4 hours, you're like, nah, that's a bit bland, you know. But the place makes such a difference. So if you can have food that you really enjoy after doing something exceptional in the outdoors, it's without price, you know.
Yeah. Okay, hold on, because I have a couple of more questions on all that. But tell me about Tangerine Dreams. The dream is always the same.
Yeah, that was from Risky Business. Mm-hmm. I can't remember when that came out, in the 80s. Couple of points with that. One is the what was his name? Tom Cruise's character, Joel, I think. So my oldest friend, who sadly isn't with us anymore, he, like the character Tom Cruise played in it, I could completely imagine my mate as that person, you know. Like there was a lot of swagger to him, you know, a huge amount of swagger to the guy. And the dream is always the same. Like he's dreaming this bit where he walks into a house and there's a really attractive woman in the shower, and he, like, in the guy in the story, he's in high school, so secondary school. And the girl says, oh, you know, come in and watch my back. I could 100% imagine my mate thinking, yeah, that'll be me. You know, I'll just walk into some, you know, really fancy house and there'll be a hot girl in the shower. And not like scream and get out of here. You'll be like, hey, how are you doing? Do you want to come and give me a hand here? You know, so that was part of it. Like, Risky Business was around the time he had that on CD or on tape, I can't remember. In college, so we shared a house for 2 years. So that was part of it. Then when I went on that hike around Mont Blanc in uni, one of the guides had like a huge collection of Tangerine Dream music, and if I think the following year we went for, did some winter hiking in the Lake District, and that was on his Walkman. So that's the point that's in there.
I came across you through our mutual friend Ross Thompson, and also Cindy and Ronan of Adventure.ie, which you've done some work with, and I think you're still doing work with. But one of the last, but you were on an expedition, was it last year or the year before, in the Arctic? Was it? Were you there cooking for the guys?
This year, actually.
Oh, this year. Sorry, there you go. Just this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know, tell me about that, because you gave me an idea of the jungle, but all of a sudden you're in the Arctic for, was it a week or 10 days, whatever it was. And just give me an idea of how did you prepare for that? Because obviously you need to be fit as well to do these things. You can't just, you know, you're not getting driven around, I'm assuming. So
No. So let me see. Ronan and I were there for 5 weeks this year.
Wow.
In total. And we would have been, Ross was going to come out and join us, and we were so Ron and Cindy and I and Ross and some other clients, we were going to do a backcountry Nordic ski tour trip right up in the tundra. So from, we had a place near Kittila is a smallish town in northern Finland, has an airport there, so a lot of trips would be, we were using an off-grid cabin, so LED lights in it, cooking with a gas stove, wood-fired sauna, composting toilets. Now it's only probably 45 minutes to an hour's drive from the nearest town, but like it's properly remote. Like the roads, the nearest road to the cabin, it's pretty big road in the area, but there's time, like I'm not talking about midnight or anything like that, like, you know, 2 PM you could probably stand on that road and have a nap for half an hour and not have any car pass you at all. Now the Finns are way better drivers than we are on the snow. Obviously, their equipment is better as well. Like studded tires, not just winter tires. They don't plow the roads all the time because sometimes the sheer volume of snow, and they might be plowing down meters and meters. But yeah, like you walk out in the roads, like I hear the birds, I hear the wind going through the trees, and that's it. It's like, bloody hell, this is amazing. Now, the fact that we're like 45 minutes drive from a town means, and the fact that it's below zero for the entire time we're there, means that we have a fridge. You know, there's no fridge in the cabin, but all you have to do is put the food into boxes and leave it outside or just on the edge of the cabin, and it would freeze. So like you could have meat, anything perishable, put it outside. It's frozen solid, like your freezer at home. Take it in, let it thaw out. Now, inside, it was probably around, roughly, depending on sort of how the temperature had been the previous couple of nights externally, inside temperature was about 10 to 15 degrees C.
Yeah.
So we had little wood-burning stoves inside. Like, working in the Arctic in those conditions, for me, trying to provision, trying to plan the food and cook is way, way easier. It's great. I don't have to worry about food going off in the next 2 days. So, and the fact that you're going to be physically active for, I don't know, 6-7 hours a day minimum, means that you're going to need decent food, you know, breakfast, lunch and dinner. Not crap, but something where you know you're getting enough calories on board, enough carbs, enough protein, enough fat. Yes, you do have to be physically fit. Now, you know, you don't have to be it's not like sprinting. It's fully aerobic activity. So you can build up to it. Like we have had clients in their 60s out with us, no problem at all. You don't have to be really young. You know, it's if you can do a couple of days back-to-back hiking in the Wicklow Hills with a bag on your back, you're perfectly capable of this kind of thing. So it's mellow. More what we're trying to do out there is teach people the skills. So learning maybe how do you cook out, how do you put up a tent in, have you ever slept outside in the wintertime? Some of our clients have never slept in a tent ever. It's like, okay, so it's minus 20. Here's your tent. Here's your sleeping bags, like proper Arctic sleeping bags. Okay, now you got to cook your dinner. All right, how do I do that? There's little things that would be easy when it's 10, 15 degrees Celsius, take on a much, much more significant aspect. Like when you're trying to put up your tent with the metal poles, you can't suddenly decide to take off your gloves when it's minus 20 and hold onto the metal pole because your fingers could stick to it. So you keep your gloves on. If you've got mitts on, mm-hmm. How do you stay warm? How do you, like, there's a lot of snacking during the day. So we would have had, like, there, feeding people properly in the morning is key because you're going to leave the cabin. It's nice 10, 15 degrees, but you could be outside and it's minus 15, minus 20. But I'll tell you, minus 10 in northern Finland, when you're standing around and there's no wind, it feels warmer than 5 degrees and drizzly and rain and blowy in Ireland. Like, even us, because it's so dry and the humidity level, the humidity level is so low, it doesn't feel like the cold is absolutely leaving you. You know, it's not soaking into your bones. Great, you're a bit chilly. How do you warm up? Put on an extra jacket, start being active, and you're warm in a few minutes. Here, like, I've had times up in the, like, waiting for a bus up in Enniskerry. It's like, what the hell? Like, I'm wearing a massive jacket and I'm still shivering, you know?
Very good.
So in those circumstances, like, feeding people in that environment is way, way easier. You have a base from which to work. Again, it's like cooking on two rings. And then when you're out camping, you have to plan the meals really well. So the first few years when you'd go to the Arctic, Ronan and I would actually, we cooked a dinner the night before. Like, we'd do a big, big chili con carne with wild rice and things like that, and then take it out to the camp. Like, it would freeze overnight. We'd thaw it, and then at camp, we'd heat it up again. But because the temperature was so cold and the quantities we'd cooked, so we were cooking for the group instead of individual. I think one time Ron and I were sitting around the stove for 2 hours, 2.5 hours to get the food up to temp for the clients.
Yeah.
As okay, that's a nightmare. So we made our own oatmeals for the morning. So it was raspberry, coconut, cardamom with a bit of coconut sugar, and some toasted almonds in there. Add your hot water to it, stir it, cap it. Like, we put it into insulated food containers. So instead of boiling the oatmeal or heating the oatmeal for 10 minutes and then having this film of burnt oatmeal on the bottom, do it in the food flasks. The insulation and the hot water does the work for you. So after 10 or 15 minutes, give it a good stir and away you go. You're ready to roll. So little things like that is stuff I learned over the years, where how to be efficient with the food, what works and what doesn't work. And obviously being Irish, you know, having porridge every morning as a kid, you know.
Absolutely. Tell me something. Gustavo Santaolalla, Deportation in Iguazu. What's this song about?
That was had that in my song when I got married a couple of years ago, 4 years actually this year. My wife's Argentinian, and we neither of us wanted to get married in a church. We didn't want a normal ceremony. And we found this small estate in County Westmeath, and they had a castle keep from the 12th century, which had fallen into ruin, covered in ivy, covered in leaves. Just a friend of a friend had said, "Oh, hey, go to here. Maybe they might be willing to loan you their field and their barn for a wedding and a wedding ceremony." So, yeah, okay, let's give it a shot. Went there, found this castle keep, and asked the woman who owned the land, said, could we hire the land off you, and would you mind if we actually got married in the castle keep? She's like, yeah, fine. I said, yeah, like it's ruined. There's no roof on it, so fingers crossed, you get a nice day. No hope at all for, like, you know, with a building that old, like you couldn't try and put a tarp over it because it was something's going to go wrong. It's like, yeah, sorry, we lost two of the guests because stones fell on them. No. So that was kind of, instead of what you call Paco Bell's canon, if you will, that was the music that she walked into, you know, into the keeping. And then 2 weeks after we got married, I got a phone call from a high-end chalet company in Switzerland, and they said, hey, yeah, we've seen your portfolio from a chef's agency, we'd like to offer you a job. Do you want to come out to Switzerland, leave in the middle of December, and you will fly back home to Ireland end of March, early April. They offered a pretty solid salary, like a really good salary. And my wife was there, she's like, yeah, take it, like, great, like, good for your career. So when I was on the phone, I said, look, like, I literally got married two weeks ago. Do you mind if I run past my wife? And the person said, yeah, absolutely. Okay, you're right. Let's see what we can do for you. So she said, yeah, my sister gave me masses of grief. She's like, you can't go to Switzerland for 4 months. You've just got married. It's like, well, my wife said I could. I just think, no, that's not acceptable at all. No. I was like, okay, well, she's fine. And my wife actually pushed me for it. So got back down to the guys. They're like, yep, great. I'll tell you what, considering your circumstances, come on out, and then when it's quiet, we say January or March, your wife can come out and we'll give you one of our chalets for
lovely.
How's that? It's like, seriously? It's like, yeah, you know, if it's empty, absolutely. Now, ordinarily, since you're not single, we put you into a studio apartment. There's no studio apartments, but how about that? It's like, hell yeah. So that was a
brilliant.
That I had to really up my game in terms of cooking. That was like the chalet, the one I was working in. For Christmas week, it rented out for £70,000 for the week.
But that brings me to my next question then. I mean, you're obviously very passionate about the outdoors and, you know, how you describe, you know, if I gave you the time, you could describe every single tree you've seen in the jungle. You know, I can see it, you know, you're interested. And it's fantastic. But what is cooking for you? Because you mentioned something there earlier on in the conversation about, yeah, there's the physical aspect of it and there's the mental aspect of it, which is really interesting. I know exactly where you're coming from. My dad was a bit like your dad. He was a great chef. He wasn't a chef by trade, but he just loved food. And he was, whenever he was at home, he would cook. And the rest of the week was subsistence. You know, we were fed by my mom because we had to be fed. But so I know exactly what you're saying in terms of passion for food. But what is cooking for you? What is, you know, because it's an art. It's beyond just throwing something on the pan, you know. What's it like for you what is that job or the job in the Arctic or the next job is going to come along? What is it? Describe it to me.
Like how does it make me feel?
Yeah. What is this cooking? Like what, because, you know, to produce what you produce, what is in the Arctic or in the chalet at 70 grand a week, you need to be, obviously you need to be skilled. That's no doubt about that. But it's beyond just being able to put a potato with a with a leek or whatever. There's a lot more to it. And what does it make you feel? What's it like? What's it like in there?
God, it's a good question. I don't have an easy answer. I think it's trying new stuff. So getting inspired by a dish you try in somebody's house or in a restaurant or a cafe or whatever the case may be. That inspires me. So if I've tried a dish that I haven't come across before, and it can be simple, you know, really, really simple. And suddenly your imagination is like, what the hell have they put in this? You know, what ingredients are in this dish? How do they make it? Obviously, where you are and people you're with makes a big impact. You know, if you're on your own, it's like, okay, that's great. If you can share the experience with somebody else, it's fantastic. And then that for me is, all right, how can I recreate that? How can I serve that dish to friends or to clients? And will they like it, you know? And occasionally it's okay, it's not for me. Like the reaction, you know, I might get from somebody else is, no, that's not my cup of tea, try something else. Or you might get a few, it's like, oh, all right, that's quite funky, what have you got in there? So that's it's like that moment when like your pupils dilate, like, whoa, that's bloody good, you know. It could be just the first forkful and you're like, oh, all right, wow. I'm not describing this. I'm not describing it particularly well. The best example, relatively recently, probably what, about 3 years ago now, 2-3 years ago, say, was in Colorado. A friend of mine, I was sleeping on their couch there from Texas, and they had, like, they said, oh, look, there's a really, really good Cajun Creole restaurant in the town. Do you want to go and try it? Went there for brunch. And I said, yeah, like, one of the things they do really well is grits. So it's basically white hominy corn cooked like it's porridge. And they had added a couple of different cheeses, jalapenos, various different spices, and then served it with pan-fried shrimp. Like, really, really simple food. You know, it's very common food in the southern US. Grits and shrimp. And I expected to be like, okay, this could be interesting, but not blown away. And that was it. Like two, three spoons in. I was like, what, how did you make it? This is phenomenally good. And outside of the US, even the southern US, you mentioned grits to anywhere, I have no idea what you're talking about. When I came back home, I spent weeks and weeks, like, it was really hard to get hominy corn grits in Ireland. So figured, okay, corn, can I substitute it with polenta? sort of fine polenta, which is readily available. And experience. So I cooked it at home a few times, served it to a few different people with shrimp and with salmon jerky and like pan-fried salmon, a whole lot of different things. And then I started experimenting with it on a camping stove when I was out. Can I make this on a camping stove, and can I serve it to people when I'm doing a winter camp? I did. It worked really well, and served it at an event in Munich, ISPO. It's an outdoor trade show, and I was doing some hands-on cooking demos. People from Sweden, Norway, from China, from South Korea, from the States. It's like, what's this? Grits with jalapenos, cheese, and some reindeer jerky. And the Swedes, who I thought would be like, yeah, this is a bit weird, they were like, I want the recipe right now. And that moment of something that had inspired me 3 years, 2 years previously, and I'm inspiring somebody else, that it's like, okay, great. Now, hopefully you're going to go and make that yourself at home. Right. Or the next time we go camping. So that's probably the closest I can get to an answer.
No, and that's fair enough, because that kind of goes along with the outdoor and the want to, for discovery and you know, being inspired by what is a tree or a barren landscape in the Arctic and just wanting to know more about it. I suppose it's the same. It's fantastic. It's great. You make me hungry now. I'm going to have to cut it short and go and get something to eat. So tell me about this song, M83, We Own the Sky.
First time I heard that was the intro music to Travis Rice movie. Travis Rice is a professional snowboarder. The movie was called That's It, That's All. I'll have to double check that one. Sorry,
I should okay, check that's in all advance. Right. No worries.
The time I was living in an apartment in Steppeside in South Dublin, and two of my friends had an apartment close by. He's a graphic designer, she's a yoga coach, and I met them we were all into snowboarding, and at the time I was working in an outdoor store. They'd come in to buy gear and we just got to chatting, and that winter the movie come out and they said, we've just got it, we bought the DVD, do you want to come on over and watch it? And the three of us sat down, watched it, as bloody hell, this is amazing. And then while we were watching the movie, they said, next winter we're going to California for 3 months. So both of them work freelance. So we're going to go to Tahoe in California and snowboard for 3 months. We've found a condo. Do you want to come out for a month, maybe? I'm sure you can find a cheap room in the condo without too much hassle. It's like, sure, yeah. And so that's what makes me think of like that. So it's the three of us, pretty much every morning, get up. We'd all do a little bit of work as we could. And then 10 o'clock, right, grand, gear up, out onto the mountain and snowboard for the day and then come back. And a couple of the days were just epic, monstrous powder stuff that I'd never experienced in Europe, where it was just chucking it down to the point where I think around 3 o'clock in the afternoon they had to close one of the chairlifts, because at the top point there was so much snow that the chairs were actually dragging through the snow. Like the bit that we sat down on was in powder. It was bitterly cold, but I remember the last run, the very last run that the three of us got where we could actually go up and go back down, it was like knee deep to hip deep pow, riding down to, okay, great, we're going to have to get telefreak, the cable car, back down to the base. Snow everywhere, like inside your jacket, in your pants, but it was glorious, absolutely glorious.
Scares in high.
I love the way every now and then you get a phone call, you end up in a different country for a few months. So I wonder who's going to ring you after this conversation, where it's going to bring you.
But look, we're coming to the end of it, and I'm going to put a link to your website in the show notes, and the people can find out a bit more. There's some great photographs of your cooking and the places you've been, and obviously they can get in touch with you through it. But just to finish it off, I know other interests you have. You've been writing, you've been contributing to the Sidetracked magazine, which is a great magazine. You've been writing about different things there, but you said to me, you're an aspiring writer. What's future hold for you? What you want to get done in the next few months or few years that really is kind of your dream to be finished with?
Well, after this year, I had a whole lot of projects planned with my creative partner, who's a professional photographer. Like, we had trips planned for Chile, and where else? We we had a project in, like, a shoot in Morocco and something else planned. So that, the hope would be for 2021 to do some of those journeys. So we work together, creating content stories for various different clients. But we're lucky enough that some of the clients we've worked with say, okay, you guys come up with the journey and the story and the recipes and all that, and if it suits us, we'll jump on board. I'm incredibly lucky. We're incredibly lucky. Like, hang on. So you guys are calling this work, and you're deciding you've gone off to Georgia into the Caucasus to go winter camp, and you write about it. It's like, yeah, it's it's a fun job. Beyond that, there's a ton of places I'd love to go. If I had to pick some place I want to go next year or the year after, would be I'd probably say Greenland. So maybe doing a journey with some friends on backcountry ski touring or backcountry Nordic touring in Greenland with a pulk and a tent and going off for a week or two. That I'd love.
Right. Fantastic. I'm going to have to leave it shortly. So let's finish it with what I ask everybody, Kieran, ask for what I call the words of wisdom. A quote, anything that gets you up in the morning. Can be anything at all.
Oh, bloody hell.
That'll do. Bloody hell will do.
Words of wisdom. I suppose the best thing is there's always stuff that gets us down. Like right now, I think a lot of people would be feeling quite, or some people will be feeling despondent. What's going to happen with work? What's going to happen with travel? When will things get back to normal? And it's like, okay, maybe I've lost my job. Maybe will I get one back? And you can't always wish things into existence. But if try and keep a little bit of positivity, or find tiny, tiny moments of positivity in the day, and hopefully get that lit to lift you. Where if you always, and I know I can't, I'm not talking about depression or anything like that, but if you know you're having a bit of a bad day, maybe listen to a clip that makes you laugh. Mm. On bad days, even though I've heard it hundreds and hundreds of times, I could probably listen to tiny clips of Billy Connolly, of his jokes, and it'll still make me laugh. And that moment of, if it makes you grin, great. It's elevation your mood a little bit. If it makes you properly belly laugh, even better. The hope that things will be better. The other one I would say is where possible, if you can, go into a forest. For me, that's a huge thing. Like, I'm lucky enough that where I live in Cavan, there's a forest only about a kilometer away, and half an hour or an hour in there, I can honestly say I know my heart rate drops and my mood elevates. So that little, like, listening to the trees, listening to the birds, that makes a huge impact on my day. So even if you live in a big built-up area, if you can go into a tiny forest, it might not be massive, go there and go away from built-up spaces. So that's probably part of how I have gotten into the areas of where, like, being in the mountains or in the wilderness, that sense of calmness away from built-up.
That's great. Okay, Kieran, we need to leave it. So the last song is Salt and Pepper Shoop.
Yep, that is entirely down to my creator partner, Lisa, my pro photographer at work. First time we did a proper shoot together was the Italian Dolomites last January. She'd come from 2 months working in Hawaii shooting surf, flew into Italy. I picked her up in the car. I went to the mountains. So she went from like plus 30 to I think minus 15 in one day. So went out for a winter camp, and she had that on her phone. So like with snowshoes, with a heavy pack, with camera gear. And she put that on, put it on speaker, and then started like kind of half dancing, half bobbing to that tune. And that night, like it was a flipping cold night. I think it went to minus 23 in the tent, like ridiculously cold. And like I was fast asleep. I remember like getting a poke in the arm, Kieran, I'm freezing. I haven't slept at all. I'm not enjoying this. So I think it was about midnight. There was frost inside the tent, packed up, and like we hiked down to a winter refuge. Like we didn't even need the tent torches. Full moon. This moon was glinting off the snow crystals. So it was incredible. At that point, I was like, okay, maybe in the winter refuge, you might get a good night's sleep. Possibly we might work again tomorrow. You know, and there's a moment of, oh, have I completely broken my friend? we're never going to work together again. It's like, hang on, I was on the beach in 30 degrees and you have me sleeping in minus 20. What the hell? But yeah, since then we've been working, I don't know, what, year and a half now at least, and every so often like that song will come back on, like we'll be driving to a shoot and she'll stick it on. It's like, yep, that's your song.
Brilliant.
So that's why. Yeah,
well, Kieran Creevy, it's been an absolute pleasure. I could talk to you all day, but time is against us, so thanks a million again, and I'm sure I will meet with you face to face one of these days once the pandemic is over. And
again,
thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Andrea. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Mel. Take care.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Here I go again, okay. Girls, what's my weakness? Okay, then chilling, minding my business. Your souls, I looked around and I couldn't believe this. I swear, I stand, my niece, my witness. The brother had it going on with something kind of wicked. Had to kick it. I'm not shy, so I asked for the digits. I hope no, that don't make me see what I want. Slip, slide to it swiftly. So I dip back to my bag of tricks, then I flip for a tip, made me wanna do tricks on them, lick them like a lollipop should be lit. Came to my senses and I chill for a bit. Don't know how you do the voodoo that you do so well. It's a spell, hell, makes me wanna shoot. You're packed in your stack, especially in the back, brother. Wanna thank your mother for a butt like that. Bang!